This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
And good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. The election race is for Norfolk County Sheriff. We've got incumbent Republican Jerry McDermott facing a challenge from Democrat Patrick McDermott. I'm your moderator, Christine James, joined by reporter Charles Mathewson from WATD and Joe DeFazio from the Patriot Ledger, asking questions tonight. Timing you all is Amy Leonard, and we're joined by media partner Quincy Community Access TV, providing video coverage. Now, our format is simple. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready, no longer than 2 minutes open and 1 minute close, please. Then we have a round of questions from the reporters, a lightning round, and this is the part we love, where the answers in the lightning round are either yes or no. And that's just yes or no without an explanation, or two sentences tops. If there's enough time, the candidates can ask each other a question or two. And we also ask that when we ask you the questions, we want you to keep your answers to a minute. Now, if you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. Now, this is the way the timing works on this, since this seems to have been a question this election season in general. Amy has the cards here. Green means go. Red means stop, but when you see the yellow, that means you have 10 seconds
to speed up.
10 seconds. Wait. Okay, Mr. Wise Guy. It means you've got 10 seconds left. When the red card comes up, you've got a slow 5 second count. If you're still talking, you get the bell, and if you're still talking after that, we cut the mics. Okay? So that's we've only had to do that just a few times over the years, but I find it very effective. Just reminding folks that we have a sponsor tonight, and that's Stuart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stuartpaint.com for special home repair and painting offers and to schedule a free estimate. Now, we just chose the opening and closing order just several minutes ago, which we will reverse at the end. We're going to begin with Patrick McDermott, and then we're going to go to Jerry McDermott, and we're going to go for our opening statements right now. Let's go, and it's 2 minutes. Good evening, Patrick McDermott.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, WATD, for hosting once again another great political forum. My name is Patrick McDermott. I'm from Quincy, where I live with my wife, Attorney Tracy Wilson, and two teenage children. Very excited that my daughter, Alana, will be turning 18 and voting for the first time in this election. Graduate of St. Paul's Choir School in Cambridge, BC High, Boston College, Suffolk University Law School. I'm a former aide at the Massachusetts House and the Senate. I'm an attorney and a former prosecutor. And I formed a Quincy City Councilor, a 16-year Democratic State Committee man, as well as the current Register of Probate for the last 18 years for Norfolk County. I'm running for Norfolk County Sheriff because I believe that it's time for the Sheriff's Office to evolve beyond the jail to better serve the people of Norfolk County. And I look forward to sharing that vision tonight. We have an opportunity to envision a new role for the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office. I'm running for sheriff because I believe it's time that the role be one of coordinating public safety across the county and changing our understanding of what public safety means. Public safety is more than putting criminals in jail. It has to be, and we all know it. Public safety means creating an environment where everyone in a community is safe to live, to grow, and to thrive. Whether it's the opioid crisis and the public influx in crime associated with it, natural disasters, or COVID-19, the Sheriff's Office can and should be a part of the answer, leading the county to coordinating responses across all communities. The infrastructure's in place, and at a time when resources and the need continues to grow, it's time for the Sheriff's Office to step up for the people of Norfolk County. I'm excited to share my vision of an expansive role in public safety for how we can work together to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the opening statement with Patrick McDermott. Now we'll go to the opening statement for Jerry McDermott.
Thank you. And first of all, I'd like to thank WATD and Quincy Cable and Patriot Ledger for hosting us tonight, and thank my opponent, Patrick, for being here. Again, my name is Jerry McDermott, and I am your sheriff of Norfolk County for these last 22 months. I was appointed by Governor Charlie Baker back in 2018 to fill the unexpired term of former Sheriff Michael Bilotti. I reside in Westwood. I'm a single dad. I have two amazing daughters, Ashling and Rory, and Ashling cast her first vote this year, and she would not let me look at it, but she assures me she voted for me. When I became sheriff, I inherited almost $5.5 million in red ink. And we closed that and ended last fiscal year in the black. I formed a task force on juvenile mental health and substance use. I moved female offenders out of MCI Framingham, which was unfair, and moved them back to a county setting. Also negotiated three successful contracts with our unions, launched a medicated-assisted treatment program to help those suffering with mental health and substance use disorder. And I'm also a graduate of Catholic Memorial, UMass Boston, and as sheriff, went out to Colorado to the National Institute of Sheriff's School, which is run by the National Institute of Corrections, and also a graduate of the FBI Leader Program and a Trilogy Award recipient. I look forward to sharing some of the reforms I've made in the last 22 months and the forward-looking programs that we've launched. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That was the Republican incumbent, Jerry McDermott. Now I'm going to turn to Joe DeFazio from the Patriot Ledger. Questions for our candidates and who you would like to start with.
Sure. I'll start with the sheriff. What have you done on the job to help cut down on recidivism?
Sure. It's a great question, Joe. I think the most important thing we could do to make our community safer is to make sure that the recidivism rate goes down. And one proven way to do that is to help people that are suffering with addiction issues. Close to 80% of the men and women that come into our care and custody have some underlying mental health issue, whether it be anxiety, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, you name it. But they have that and a co-occurring substance use disorder. And by launching a pilot program called the medication-assisted treatment, we are actually helping people beat their addictions. And it's not just dispensing medicine. It's actually giving them a robust counseling sessions with our behavioral health team so that when they leave our care and custody, they can continue on that path to wellness and not be repeat offenders. And if we can help these people, and I often refer to it as sometimes you have a lot of people coming in that are broken people. If we can help heal them, we make them better, we make their family better, we make the community at large safer.
Okay, question for Patrick McDermott.
Mr. McDermott, what would you plan to do on the job if elected to cut down on recidivism?
So, yeah, recidivism is first and foremost something that we have to get a hold of from a metrics-based perspective. We need to find out exactly what the recidivism rate is before we can actually tackle it. But I think that my theme that I've talked about throughout the campaign is about prevention, intervention, education, and hope. Recidivism starts before people even start into the criminal justice system. We need to make sure that we prevent those people from getting involved in the first place through systemic programs that we can have in our with our at-risk youth population, with folks that are already experiencing problems in the district court, I think before they get to the jail. While they're at the jail, I think we have to have a robust, expansive programs to make sure that all of the issues that they deal with have to be resolved, you know, mental health, addiction issues, as well as the corrective behavior necessary for the people that are there. But the most important thing is reentry, and reentry means we have to make sure that they take care of their housing, their mental health counseling, their addiction, health care, and jobs. I have a plan to do that.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Patrick, the last time we were here in this room, it was the primary election. And I remember distinctly the subject coming up, what you've both been talking about, mental health, being a human service provider. And your opponent then said he was more on the human service provider side. And you said, yes, but you need a politician to get things done. So my question is, are you still more of a politician than a human service provider?
I don't remember actually saying I was a human service provider necessarily, but I am a politician. I'm very proud of the fact that I see public service as a calling. I've been a public servant for 25 years. But I think, yes, when it comes to mental health and addiction issues, part of what I may have said was that I'm involved in multiple nonprofits. And throughout my career in public service, I've created relationships with multiple nonprofit agencies. You know, Quincy Manette Health Center, Dove, Bay State Community Services, numerous mental health and addiction places, the Gavin House, Gavin Foundation, recovery houses. So I think that we have to have a little balance of both. But in order to make sure that these programs actually get funded, you do need to have an ability to reach out to folks on the Hill and make sure that your budget is properly funded. My background is working in Beacon Hill back in the day. I know I have those relationships, and when it comes to making sure that we need the programs at the jail, I'm willing to basically go to bat for that.
Jerry, the same question. And by the way, you're not twins. I don't think we've stated that yet.
But, not yet.
Right. No brothers of any type. Similar question to you. How do you balance being a politician and a provider of services to the inmates?
So I don't come at this from a political point of view at all. I think that the role of sheriff, this is the least partisan position in government, frankly, and I think that we're now filling a void. Years ago, we had state-run mental health hospitals, and one in our county, Medfield, is now closed, long closed, and it's going to become a mixed-use development with high-end condos. What I see as sheriff over the last 22 months is we have a large, I don't want to say the vast majority, but we have a large number of men and women that are in the care and custody of sheriffs across the state because there is nowhere else for them to go and no better place to serve them. So we are the largest social service provider, if you will, in the county. And again, many of the people would probably do better in a setting where they were getting help from psychologists, getting the proper medication. But many of the people are there, frankly, because their loved ones weren't equipped to deal with them. They took themselves off their prescribed medicine, ended up on the street, and then court involved.
A somewhat related question. The Office of County Sheriff across the state, whether it's still associated with the counties or not, frequently becomes a job opportunity position as politicians. Do you see yourself as a job provider or a service provider, Patrick?
It's without question a service provider. It's the same thing I've done for the last 18 years as Register of Probate for Norfolk County, providing services and access to justice programs for people of limited means. I believe that every person needs access to our court system, and I've made it my career to make sure that those programs are available through strategic partnerships with our nonprofit community. That's what's made the Norfolk Probate and Family Court a success story. I'll bring the same kind of knowledge to the Norfolk County House of Correction. I think we have to engage in legal service reform. I think we need to make sure that we have a robust legal services program for the inmates at the jail. But we also have to think outside of the jail, too. And I think that when it comes to mental health and addiction issues, we have to invest in our nonprofit communities, our local community health centers. We need to invest in our workforce development. I have the strategic partnerships with our labor unions, and I think that is going to be of immense value when it comes to providing inmates the hope that they need when they leave the jail for housing, jobs, and workforce development and education.
Jerry, will you pledge that if you continue as sheriff, the department will not be a jobs program?
I will absolutely make that pledge, and I would say that I've hired professional people to fill the roles, including probably one of the most important roles, and that of superintendent, who's also special sheriff, and that's Mike Harris. I was lucky enough to pick him up from Suffolk County. That was like getting the Tom Brady of superintendents. Mike is renowned for his forward-thinking programs, and a lot of the programs that I am now implementing are things that Mike and I have collaborated on, and it's important to have a good, solid professional as your superintendent, because if you ever become incapacitated or travel out of state, that person is usually your special sheriff and therefore becomes acting sheriff. So I think it's important, not only to get the best people, but also I want it to be more inclusive, and I appointed a chief diversity officer, Deputy Superintendent Carter Holmes, to make sure that when we do have job openings, we cast a wide net and make sure that we tap all the talent that's out there in Norfolk County.
Thank you.
I just want to do a follow-up question with that general idea. This was a question that we got sent in from a listener, and it said, during the primary, some candidates said they wanted to remove politics from the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office. There have been rumors during the general election that candidates have stated that they, quote, want a clean house if elected. Have either of the candidates made a plan to remove people from their positions if they publicly supported their opponent or made comments to that effect? Let's start with you, Sheriff Jerry McDermott.
I think to answer this question, past is prologue. When I came in December of 2018, I didn't clean house at all. And I think everybody was expecting that I would go in there and start firing people. And to the contrary, I didn't. I thought the best thing to do is give everybody that my predecessor, Michael Bilotti, had in place, give them a chance to prove themselves. And I did that. And, you know, there's people that are supporting my opponent openly that I've actually promoted, given pay raises to and promoted in the position. So I think that speaks volumes of who I am as a person. I put the politics aside. Look, I know politics could be a blood sport, but at the end of the day, we have to run a professional organization up there. So I will pledge that there'll be no kind of retribution at all if I'm fortunate enough to be elected by the voters.
Okay. Patrick McDermott, same question. Any cleaning house? Any getting rid of people?
You know, my history speaks for itself as well. For 18 years as Register of Probate, and part of that plan, I served as president of the Registers of Probate, and we put together with the trial court leaders a robust hiring and how to go about hiring people through behavioral-based interviewing, making sure there's blind hires so that we make sure that there's the best and the brightest coming in without any political ramifications. I've actually hired based upon that throughout my career in the Register of Probate. Now, as sheriff, I'm going to make sure that we are going to be the number one in the state, so I want to make sure that we have number one personalities that are coming in. I will review the entire staff upon taking the oath of office, and for people that meet the criteria of the position and share my vision, then we'll stick along and go along that front. But I think if we need to bring in new people, I will search out the best and the brightest and bring in the talent that we need to make sure that the vision for prevention, intervention, education, and hope rings true throughout Norfolk County.
Thank you. You're listening to a political forum here. It's the race for Norfolk County Sheriff. We have the incumbent Republican, and that is Jerry McDermott, his Democrat challenger, and that is Patrick McDermott. Going to go back now to Joe DeFazio from the Patriot Ledger. Questions for the candidates.
Sure. I'll start with the sheriff. Both Democratic candidates who lost in the primary have endorsed you instead of the Democrat. Why do you think those endorsements went your way?
Well, first of all, I'm honored that both Jimmy Coughlin and Bill Phelan have endorsed my candidacy, and I think it's because they see that in the last 22 months on the job, I really have made great progress up there, and I've made great reforms. And again, I know that they're lifelong Democrats, and I'm a Charlie Baker Republican, but I can't stress enough to the voters that it's really the least partisan position out there. And just because somebody has an R or a D next to their name isn't why you should have them as your sheriff. It should be the vision for the office and what you're doing to help change people's lives and make communities safer. So I think it's because of all the work that we've done, the hard work over the last 22 months, the progress that we've made, programs I've implemented, is what earned me their endorsement, and I'm very proud of that. They're both great guys, class acts, from very good families.
Thanks. Mr. McDermott, question to you. Both the men you beat in the primary endorse the Republican over the Democrat. Does that concern you?
No, not at all. I mean, we both come to the table with our fair share of endorsements. I mean, I've had, the highest level folks like Attorney General Maura Healey, the district attorney, Michael Morrissey endorsed me, met numerous state reps and senators, and Representative Tommy Vitolo from Brookline, et cetera. I'm really proud more so of the endorsements I get from the community leaders who are involved in our nonprofit community and just regular citizens. But at the end of the day, the most important endorsement and the endorsement I've carried my entire political career has been the endorsement of the voters. I've never lost an election. I think I've been on the ballot, and I think I've been elected at least 17 or 18 times. So it's the endorsement of the voters that count here, and that's the one I have been talking to since day one on this campaign, and I will continue to do so for the next 14 days.
Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Something that's been a topic with representatives and senators throughout this campaign season has been immigration and ICE. You are in an unusual position. We won't ask about sanctuary cities, but what do you see is the role between the Sheriff's Department and federal immigration? Jerry.
Well, we swear an oath, and I live up to that every day, and we'll partner as we have partnered with local, state, and federal authorities to keep our community safe. That's our job, number one. We don't hold ICE detainees. However, we do hold U.S. Marshal detainees. There was a longstanding practice at Norfolk County with my predecessor, not to hold ICE detainees, and I've carried that forward. And really, if you think about the close to 400 inmates in our care and custody, we have enough work on our table, enough on our plate to deal with helping the people in our care and custody be rehabilitated, get skilled up so that when they do leave our care and custody, they're better off than when they came in, and they are least likely to offend, and that they have a job and they're productive members of society again. So I don't really see us needing to bring in ICE detainees for any monetary reason or to build up our budget. I know some sheriffs have tried that, and it hasn't worked out too well for them.
What if you discover that one of your inmates is an illegal immigrant? How do you deal with ICE in that case?
We don't look at whether they're illegal immigrant or not. What we do before somebody leaves our care and custody, if any of the federal agencies, for example, including Homeland Security, said that you're holding a Joe Smith and we have outstanding warrants on him, or we know that we've been looking for him, we'd like to come get him, we'll say, well, as far as the county's concerned, he's leaving within X amount of days, and if they come, they come. But we're not holding them there forever. So it'd be up to the federal authorities to make arrangements to come get them. It hasn't happened in the 22 months I've been there.
Patrick, same question.
Yes, yeah, so, I don't believe it's the job of the Norfolk County Sheriff to do the bidding of ICE and the federal immigration folks out of Washington, especially under this administration. But at the end of the day, the public, we can't talk about public safety when the public doesn't feel safe. And I don't think we can go back to a day when our immigrant populations and our communities of color have to be afraid that something is going to happen to them and they're going to be either picked up and detained. But at the end of the day, I would not carry forward and enter into any agreements to hold ICE detainees. And in fact, I think that sometimes the sheriff's office, over the course of many years, not just in Norfolk County, but throughout, we're holding these federal detention folks, the U.S. Marshals. Right now, into COVID, we're trying to get our prison populations lowered. And I think that the federal government needs to step up and find better places where they can detain their own inmates. We have enough of an issue with dealing with the county inmates, then we don't have to deal with the feds. So,
what about the other half of that? If you discover that you have an inmate who is illegally in this country, would you let ICE know? How much would you cooperate with ICE?
I mean, ICE has to, first and foremost, there has to be a judicial process in place. So there has to be, to me, the problem with some of the ICE issues is to you have some of these administrative orders that are just signed off by magistrates. At the end of the day, if there is a judicial process that has been put in place with proper legal representation by the inmate, and a judicial order is then put in place where that I'm required to hold an inmate, then I will uphold that. But unfortunately, right now, it's just I'm not just to invite ICE agents into the county facility and take a look at what our inmate population is and see if their records match with ours.
Thank you.
Okay. This is another question sent in by a listener, and it's for both candidates. During your tenure as sheriff, Jerry, or probate, Pat, were you ever accused of creating a hostile workplace by your union, Pat?
I have not, is a simple question, but I mean, when it comes to, I have a whole, my operation at the probate court, I have one union that I work with, and I think in 18 years, I think I can count grievances on one hand with maybe one finger gone, I think. We have an open door policy at the probate court, and my shop steward frequently comes in and we have conversations, and all of my employees have access to discuss their concerns with me. Most of our policies that we've put in place over the course of 18 years have all been policies that have been developed mostly from the employees' input. I've always said edicts coming from the corner office without being able to communicate effectively with the staff never go over well, and that's what causes union strife. So I have a great working relationship with our union. I have great working relationships with numerous unions on the outside. And I think that's why I have a robust endorsement of the labor unions as well as the three unions at the sheriff's office.
Jerry, what about you with the sheriff's office? Any?
No, I have never been accused of creating a hostile work environment. In the 22 months that I've been there, I've got along great with all of the employees, including the three unions that have endorsed my opponent. I did receive a letter today, which is interesting because it's the day of the debate with 2 weeks to go on the campaign. That doesn't have much merit to it at all, but it's I guess it's their form of a filing a grievance with me. But it seems more of a political motivated stunt than anything that has merit. But we have an open door policy. Many of the employees ask if they can call me, and they have my personal cell phone, and they ask if they can come down the hall and see me and go outside of the chain of command. And I love that free-flowing communication that I have. And I also implemented something called the super suggestion box, which the superintendents don't like, but everyone else does, where you can anonymously put in a comment, the good, the bad, the ugly, a suggestion, whatever you want, and you put your suggestion in that box, and it gets right to me.
Okay. You're listening to a WATD political forum here, sponsored tonight by Stuart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stuartpaint.com for special home repair and painting offers and to schedule a free estimate. It's the Norfolk County Sheriff candidates. We've got the incumbent, Jerry McDermott, and we've got his challenger, Democrat Patrick McDermott. We'll be back right after this.
It seems like political season never ends, just like taking care of your home. Hi, I'm Sheldon Stewart of Stewart Painting in Hingham. Taking the first step in voting can be very similar to taking the first step in painting and repairing your home. Neither should wait. Take pride in your vote and your home. Visit our website at stuartpaint.com to learn more about our services, or stop by our Hingham office at 15 Levitt Street. Stewart Painting. Expect the best.
WATD's political forum continues now. Back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Oh, thank you, and welcome back to this political forum for the candidates for Norfolk County Sheriff. Going to go back now to Joe DeFazio from the Patriot Ledger. You've got questions for the candidates.
Thank you. This is Sheriff McDermott. Obviously, coronavirus has touched all of our lives in some more serious ways than others. How do you think you've done protecting the inmates in your custody amid the coronavirus, and how do you think you're going to help improve that situation going forward?
Excellent question. So, of course, when I was appointed sheriff back in 2018, nobody could have seen or foreseen a COVID-19 global pandemic. But we were fortuitous, maybe, in ordering these sanitizing guns. We had about seven of them. You think of Alka-Seltzer. You drop these little bleach tablets in with water, and you can spray and disinfect surfaces. We move quickly with implementing safety measures for the inmates in our care and custody, as well as our staff. That was paramount to make sure we had the proper PPE. We have been abiding by all the guidelines and making sure that people are safe. And one thing that did actually help us socially distance the inmates was when the Supreme Judicial Court ordered, because of the pandemic, that some inmates that were pre-sentenced be allowed out under certain conditions. So that actually allowed us to space people out. But what I did was I pulled together the best people that we had on staff, and we created something called the Pathogen Response Team, and it's headed up by Dr. Wersel, a renowned epidemiologist.
Thank you. And to Mr. McDermott, if elected, my guess is we will still be dealing with coronavirus, unfortunately. How do you think your opponent's done at the jail, and what would you like to do differently or the same if elected regarding coronavirus?
Well, in terms of my background, and I mean, this hit us all at the same time back in March, and luckily for us at the Norfolk Probate Court, I had put together an emergency response plan anyways, not for COVID necessarily, but for more if the shutdown ever occurred for the courthouse and things of that nature. But when COVID hit, we had to put an immediate, we had to augment that response plan, make sure that we sent the employees home. We did a half on, half off. And we've been successful at it. We've had no major problems at the probate and family court. One of the problems I think we have at the jail now is the fact that we still have too many prisoners still there. I mean, it is a difficult situation at the jail. But one of the issues that I have a real problem with is, and it has to do with the trial courts, is the backlog of cases, and inmates are being held at the jail far too longer than they should be. That's why I've proposed that a modular courtroom be installed at the campus of the Norfolk County Correctional Facility, and I have the partnership with the district attorney already in place for that, as well as the Chief Justice of the District Court.
Thanks. Do you have any follow-up question for that?
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Charles?
Something that doesn't really affect a sheriff as much as police chiefs, but seems to have been an issue in this campaign, and that is police reform. I'm going to skip to the end. We usually ask a few questions about this, but there are three parts to the reform proposed. One is doing away with immunity, being made suit-proof, training, and certification. Which of those do you feel most strongly about, either positively or negatively, Jerry?
So on the certification, yes, of course. Professional standards we need to raise. But on the doing away with immunity for the officers, I think that's a bridge too far, and you're going to see morale sink further, which has happened to a lot of local police departments during this time. And you'll see people retire, which has happened in major cities like Boston and New York. And it's going to be a problem for recruiting. So, you know, if you put yourself in the shoes of a first responder, police or fire, and, you know, you do something wrong as a police officer, do you want to lose your house? Do you want to be sued personally? I think that the answer here is continue the professional development and the professional training. I would say, without exception, Massachusetts has the greatest standards compared to the rest of the country when it comes to our law enforcement officials. And I'm proud to have been endorsed by all 28 police chiefs in Norfolk County.
Patrick, same question. Which of those three issues is most important to you?
Well, I'm the brother of a Quincy police officer and a nephew of a Boston police detective and numerous friends in law enforcement. I served on the Public Safety Committee on the City Council back in the 90s. I was given quite a few awards for our effort on community policing. And so I understand what policing is all about. I think the most important thing there is the ongoing training and I think certification of police officers. I think that is something that most professions have to endure. I think lawyers like myself have to endure that. I mean, I think hairstylists have to be licensed and get education, upgrade on hygiene and things. So I think police departments need to make sure that we have an ongoing certification process. I think that's the most important thing. And I think most police officers and police chiefs, I think it's the police chiefs that have been advocating that for years anyways. So I think that's the most important thing. Qualified immunity, something I think we need to keep in place. That was a 1967 U.S. Supreme Court case. It's been around since then. I think, unfortunately, some of the courts have done wrong by it. But I think we need to make sure we give our police officers the protection they need.
Thank you.
I'd like to know what kind of Republican you are and what kind of a Democrat you are. Let's start with Patrick McDermott. What kind of Democrat are you?
I'm a fantastic Democrat. This is the system that we have in place, and we could talk about partisanship back and forth, but this is the system that the United States has forged. I mean, you'd have arguments back to the Federalist Papers and arguments about parties, but at the end of the day, I was raised as a Democrat. My dad was a World War II veteran, came out of the war, was hanging around with guys like Jack Kennedy, Tip O'Neill, Peter Clardy, Judge Adazani, so a lot of these folks from Brighton back in the days. And, so I was raised in a Democratic household. But as I evolved as an adult, you know, I took a very hard look at where the party structure is and where the values and principles are. And I see the Democratic Party as one that focuses on those marginalized communities, those people that are underserved, those people that need the assistance that they can't right now get on their own. So I think that government plays a role in that. I think the Democratic Party has championed those values for those marginalized communities, housing, infrastructure, health care, and criminal justice reform.
Okay, 30 seconds. But what kind of a Democrat are you? A lot of people say Republicans have gone too far right, Democrats have gone too far left. Are you a left Democrat, or are you more central?
I would consider
central?
Myself a moderate Democrat. I think that's pretty much it. I mean, my opponent in the primary was able to get the progressive mass endorsement. I came in second on that. So. But if anything, you know, I consider myself a moderate Democrat. I think I'm a reasonable, level-headed Democrat that believes in moving our community forward.
Okay. And Jerry McDermott, how would you define yourself? What kind of Republican are you?
A JFK Democrat. or which today which today is known as probably a Charlie Baker Republican. I would say just, you know, to the voters out there, it's pragmatism. I'm pragmatic. That's a kind of Republican. It's not, certainly not far right. I don't even believe that President Trump is really a Republican. I'm not sure exactly what, you know, he's kind of his own brand. But I was raised in a Democratic household as well. My mom and dad came over after World War II from Ireland, you know, first generation America. Jack Kennedy was God in our house. And, you know, I just saw that the Democratic Party from JFK to AOC has lurched so far left. I think like a lot of voters in Norfolk County, you kind of feel like you don't recognize the Democratic Party anymore. And that's why the biggest voting bloc in Norfolk County and in Massachusetts is the unenrolled.
Okay, thank you. Quick question. Have you voted for a Democrat in the past 10 years in any position?
Oh, I'm sure I have and contributed.
Okay. Yeah. He was one of my sponsors for my St. Patrick's Day fundraiser every year.
I was going to ask you, Patrick, have you voted for a Republican in the past 10 years?
No.
Okay. All right. Let's go now to Joe DeFazio from the Patriot Ledger.
Thank you. In addition to the inmates you have in your care at the jail, you're also in charge of a corrections officers and a pretty large staff. I went to you before, Sheriff. So, Mr. McDermott, what do you think is the toughest issue facing correction officers?
Right now, it is a big staff at the Norfolk County House of Correction. It's about 230 corrections officers there. I think right now what's facing, at least, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet with and discuss the issues with the corrections officers there, and I think right now their biggest frustration is chain of command and leadership, and I think that, you know, accountability is something that they certainly long for. I started my discussions with them right after I decided to run for office. I didn't get their endorsement right away. It was something that I think I've earned. Many of them have followed me over the course of this campaign, and I've been able to work not only the corrections officer's endorsement, but the endorsement of the non-uniformed employees there. And finally, just most recently, the supervisory union. I've talked about accountability, transparency, and chain of command, and instilling discipline within the officers, and I think that's resonated with them.
Thank you. And Sheriff, question to you. What do you think is the biggest issue facing corrections officers in the tough work that they do?
Sure. It's an excellent question. When I became sheriff, the first thing I heard was morale's terrible, right? And we don't get paid enough. So I'd say there's a host of things. One is the job is very, very difficult. It does not pay enough. And that's why I've gone to Beacon Hill to fight for pay parity so that county corrections officers get paid the same as their counterparts at the state DOC. I also understand that it's, you know, corrections officers die 10 years younger on average than any other profession. So I, along with the 13 other sheriffs, we're launching something called the One for All Foundation, so that, God forbid, there is a suicide by an officer, we'll have anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 to give the surviving spouse and kids. And for morale, we try to do everything we can to help boost morale, including Corrections Officer of the Month, Corrections Officer of the Quarter, which comes with a gift card and a nice parking spot. So we try to do everything we can, and you know, I think that the officers up there respect that. They've seen my open door policy, and I think the biggest problem for them is probably the stress level. So we've enhanced our EAP.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Patrick, you've said that you want the services of the Sheriff's Department to reach beyond the House of Correction. Could you elaborate on that? How would you do that?
So I have like this four-pronged theme about prevention, intervention, education, and hope. So beyond the four walls of the jail, we need to evolve. I mean, it's one thing is the incarceration piece, but I think that we have a lot of work to do in terms of that prevention element, working with the at-risk populations, mostly the youth. I think the major population at the jail currently now is between the ages of 18 and 34. I think we have a lot of first-time offenders there that I think have been misguided from a very young age. So I think we need to focus on that. I have a plan to work with our juvenile court and our district courts with juvenile offenders as well as first-time offenders to make sure that we prevent people from being incarcerated in the first place. But outside the jail, more robust is making sure that upon reentry that they have the partnerships in the nonprofit communities, housing, health care, job training. One of the things I want to do is give a direct partnership with our labor unions. There's not one business manager who's endorsed my candidacy that hasn't said yes to taking a possible inmate and put them in, and put them to work after incarceration.
Jerry, in your 22 months, how has your regime differed from what Patrick has been supporting?
So I do believe that the sheriff's role is more than just running a safe and secure facility, the jail and the House of Correction. We also have a leadership academy in Braintree, which was almost shut down because of COVID-19. But that teaches self-esteem building. It has anti-bullying curriculum. It gives our young people guidance that they so desperately need. And prior to COVID-19, I took it upon myself to get out to as many schools as I could. We use the opportunity to say, go read a book to the kids. But really what we're out there doing is talking to them about making good choices in life and not starting down a path of abusing alcohol and starting out trying sampling drugs. And what I would do is bring an inmate with me. It's not really a scared straight program, but I would bring the youngest looking baby-faced inmate that I could, and we would do a Q&A with the junior high and the high school, and you could hear a pin drop because that inmate connected with those kids, really got through to them so that they stay on the right course. And also, I think the Task Force on Juvenile Mental Health and Substance Use Disorder that I launched broadens the role.
Thank you. Any follow-up on that?
Yeah, can we broaden that a little bit? In the midst of COVID, the opioid epidemic has been ignored. And I've dealt with enough addicts that were successful in going straight and were role models. And then I hear, oh yeah, they died of an overdose. You only have maximum 2.5 years with some of these inmates. How do you deal with the opioid crisis, Jerry?
Sure.
I shouldn't say crisis. The ongoing, unrelenting opioid epidemic.
Right. So the opioid epidemic, let's, meet it head on. What we're talking about is people with some underlying mental health issues. This is a disease of addiction. So what we do both inside is we have the medication-assisted treatment, which is a pilot program, but we have a continuum of care so that somebody who leaves our care in custody isn't just leaving us with no safety net built in. They have a support network. I just recently visited a group called One Life at a Time in Braintree, and we may form a new partnership with them so that when people leave us, there's a warm handoff so that that person who's been battling addiction issues, whether it be drugs or drugs or alcohol, doesn't fall through the cracks and doesn't relapse and die. The first 72 hours after somebody leaves a county facility or state DOC are the most dangerous. Those first 72 hours, is if they pick up, they have a higher rate of overdose, and we all know that the drug cartels are unrelenting in bringing fentanyl into this country, and they're thinking they're shooting up heroin. The amount of fentanyl that's inside is what's killing our kids.
Yeah, Patrick, what he says is so true about people in most danger in the first, less than a week after leaving custody. What would you do?
Yeah, so and the other danger is the myth is that you are true in terms of the fact that the sentencing at the jail is up to 2.5 years in the House of Correction, but the average inmate, I believe, stays about 45 days, or maybe a little bit longer. So there's not a lot of time. So I think that that's when the reentry programs are most important. I think you have to start thinking reentry with our inmate population well before they're ready to go out the door. I think that you need to make sure that the counselors and the staff there that are directly trained focus on the reentry component more than anything else. I'd like to actually see the sheriff's office have a more robust relationship post-incarceration, working with the probation officers, working with the Office of Community Corrections to actually work with inmates post-incarceration. Right now, even the Office of Community Corrections is only located in Quincy. I think we need to expand that and make sure that the folks down county have just as much access to those opportunities as the people who live closer to Quincy. But I think opioid addiction problem throughout our community, we need to make sure the services are available as soon as they hit the ground outside the jail.
I'd like to ask you both, what makes you want to be sheriff? What drives you to this? Is it the fact that it's, you know, by the next election it'll be a 6-year term, pays well, control a lot of jobs. Is there some kind of a fire in your belly about this? Do you want to save the world? Was there a person that you met that you saw life changed in jail? I don't know. Like, what is it? Is it just another job or is it a mission? Patrick.
So I've often said I started with creating a mission statement when I was a young kid, and it was a mission statement. It was based upon engaging people and helping people solve their problems, especially when I have the knowledge and the opportunity to do so. And that was as a young kid. I think I took a Tony Robbins class, and that was what I came up with. My entire career has been based upon that. 18 years as Register of Probate. I could have run for re-election and run re-election very easily. I wouldn't have had an opponent, most likely. I could have sailed off into the sunset and grabbed a retirement in another 10 years. I live a challenge-based lifestyle, one that looks for challenges and looks for opportunities where I think my skills can partner up with where those challenges are. I think that the Norfolk County Sheriff's Office gives me a great opportunity for a lot of challenges there, a lot of issues that we can do. I think recidivism is the number one issue that has to be dealt with. We need to reduce the amount of people revolving through the criminal justice system. I think I have some ideas as a former prosecutor, an attorney, and a partner in the nonprofit community to make that happen.
Okay. What drives you to want to be sheriff, Jerry?
I want to help people. And that's why I got into public service in the first place. My heroes like JFK, it's really about, you know, what you can give back. And growing up where I did in Oak Square, Brighton, I saw a lot of people, veterans returning from Vietnam, strung out on the town green. And I remember my dad saying, "Don't let me catch you hanging in Oak Square. It's a bad place." And it was after the Vietnam War, and, you know, in the 70s, WGBH did a documentary on the place that I grew up in, and they dubbed it Needle Park. So I had seen the horrors of addiction at a very young age. I was probably 9 or 10 going to Little League Baseball. Years later, when I was on the Boston City Council, a young man on my street overdosed. Great guy, great family. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where you come from. The power of the addiction is what's killing our kids. And he got hooked on OxyContin and then went to heroin. So the reason I want to be sheriff is to leverage the power of that position to help change people's lives and help them kick the booze, get off the drugs, and lead a productive life.
Okay. Joe DeFazio, question for the candidates for Norfolk County Sheriff.
Thank you. So we've done a lot of coverage on the South Shore this year around the Thin Blue Line flag, which is a black and white flag with a thin blue line across it that is meant to honor fallen officers. But there's been a controversy about what it means now, and it makes some folks, particularly folks of color, feel uncomfortable. And Sheriff, you have one up at the jail facility now. And so my question is, does that flag belong on public property?
I think it's an excellent question, Joe. So the thin blue line flag to me represents everybody, every man and woman in law enforcement, which is a very broad and very diverse group of society. People of all color. People of color are in law enforcement, and I know many of them. They're my friends, and they like the thin blue line flag, and it helps boost their morale to say that we do love our law enforcement folks. We do love our police. We don't forget that they were heroes on 9/11 in New York or on the Marathon bombing. Day in and day out, we respect them and we back them. I'm sorry that some people look at that flag and view it as something other than what it is, which is a proud flag for all folks in law enforcement, whether they're black, white, brown, yellow, or LGBTQ. But that particular flag that I have up at the Norfolk County House of Correction is for a Weymouth resident who passed away, Sergeant Michael Chesna. And I thought it was a fitting thing to do for his parents, who are my friends. After that flag was taken down in Hingham, I thought we'd give it a safe, respectful place to fly.
Thank you. Just a 30-second follow-up.
Sure.
Have you spoken to any inmates at the facility about that flag, or do they have thoughts about it?
I walk around that facility all the time, and I engage with the inmates. Not a one of them has brought it up to me. I think more people are trying to make something out of it than really needs to be, and it's unfortunate. And in this bitterly divisive partisan bickering that's going on in Washington, D.C., I'm disgusted with both sides. And I think that there are some sinister forces trying to tear us apart as people, tear us apart as Americans, and we're better than that.
Thank you. Mr. McDermott, same question to you. Does the thin blue line flag belong on public property?
Yeah, and at the end of this, we go back to the root cause of what has happened here. I mean, obviously, amid the COVID-19 crisis, we also had an explosion right after the George Floyd issue, and we kind of exposed what we always knew was in existence, and that's systemic racism in our community, and it's in our criminal justice system. It's unfortunately in our housing, in our economic development, our jobs. I've attended numerous rallies on both sides with folks who are protesting against police violence, and I've also attended rallies with police officers. And the one that stood out most in form of was in Braintree. It was the Braintree police officers as well as Black Lives Matter were in attendance. I was the last one to leave that night after entering into some long and painful discussions with some of the attendants there, mostly the BLM people. But I think as sheriff, you need to take a leadership role on this. You need to have the real, raw, relevant conversations with people. If the public doesn't feel safe, we can't talk about public safety. That's my role as the public safety officer for Norfolk County.
Okay.
Does it belong on public property?
It doesn't belong flying on a permanent basis. I mean, I think it's something that is something of honor that we give, sadly, in a moment when we tragically lose an officer's life, and that could be a police officer or a corrections officer, but I don't think it needs to have a permanent home on any public facility.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'd like to go to the lightning round now, and this is the part of the forum where we ask the candidates questions that either have a yes or no answer or one or two sentences tops. So I believe we were going to go to you, Charlie. I think you were next with the lightning round questions.
That's fine. I would like to know, if you are not successful, what's the first movie or book or piece of recreation you'd like to do? Jerry.
First thing I'm going to do is spend more time with my two daughters.
Patrick?
Yeah, I have to reconnect with my wife and my two kids. I have a whole closet full of books that I keep ordering and have not get around to read. So,
okay.
1776 is the first one I would like to read.
Lightning. Two sentences. What are your thoughts on private jails, Jerry McDermott?
I'd be opposed to private jails. I don't think that the business that we're in is not for profit.
Okay. What do you think about private jails?
Absolutely reprehensible.
Okay. Lightning round question?
Trump, Biden, or neither.
Okay. Let's start with Jerry.
Neither, might write in Baker.
Okay. Patrick?
Biden-Harris.
Okay. Charlie?
What's your favorite place to hang out in the county? It's a big, complicated country, like Hummerock, for instance, or someplace else.
Well, I reside in Westwood, so I get around the county pretty well. Oftentimes, we'll go to Norwood Center.
I'm a 30-year rider in the Pan Mass Challenge. I love biking, and I've biked all over the Commonwealth, but my favorite place is the Blue Hills.
Okay, let's go to our final statements now, and let's reverse the order. So we're going to start with Jerry McDermott, and then we're going to go to Patrick McDermott. Closing statements, 1 minute, please.
Well, again, I'd like to thank WATD and Quincy Cable for hosting this, and to my opponent, and of course to Patriot Ledger for being here. And to the viewers at home, I would just like to say in the last 22 months, we've made some great progress. I ended the unfair practice of having females sent to state custody. I brought them back to the county level where female offenders could get the same robust programming as the men. I successfully launched a medication-assisted treatment program to help people that are suffering with underlying mental health issues and substance use disorder so that we don't have to attend more wakes and funerals and that we can get people clean and sober and leading a productive life. I'm honored to have the endorsement of all 28 Norfolk County police chiefs, all 28 Norfolk County fire chiefs, over 30 legislators, community activists, and citizens that have endorse my candidacy because they see the forward-looking progress in reforms that we've implemented. I inherited almost $6 million in red ink, but we closed last fiscal year in the black. No small task. More forward progress can happen, but I need your vote. I respectfully ask for your vote, number one on the ballot, number one for public safety. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was the incumbent Republican, Jerry McDermott. Now we're going to go to the Democrat challenger, Patrick McDermott.
Prevention, intervention, education, and hope. Those are the keys to a safer, stronger Norfolk County. The Norfolk County Sheriff's Office has the opportunity and, quite frankly, the responsibility to become a resource for all residents of Norfolk County. In this unprecedented time to our health, safety, and well-being, I believe that the Sheriff's Office must do more to change how we think about public safety in Norfolk County. I'm running for Norfolk County Sheriff because I believe it's time for the Sheriff's Office to evolve beyond those four walls of the jail to better serve the people of Norfolk County. I want to thank WATD, QATV, for giving me the opportunity to share my vision with you tonight. If you want to learn more about my campaign or get involved, please visit patrickmcdermott.org. With your help, we can create a safer, more secure Norfolk County for everyone. I humbly ask for your vote on or before November 3rd. My name is Patrick McDermott, and I say, pick Pat.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to a WATD political forum here with Quincy Community Access Television. Of course, Joe DeFazio from the Patriot Ledger, Charles Mathewson from WATD asking questions with Mayor Engineer Larry Nelson. And we've got our timer here, Amy Leonard. Nothing gets by her with that construction paper. And then, of course, over in the corner there, we have our, look at that, our intern, Colin Cronin there, providing security here at WATD. And this entire forum will be up on our website tomorrow. Selected cuts will run in Morning Drive. And, of course, stay tuned to WATD on election night. We will be going live on the air, starting with our pregame show at 7 o'clock. We'll be here till midnight, bringing you all the results, letting you know what's happening. As I tell people, get out there and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD. Thank you so much for listening.